Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Best Interest of the Family Radio. I'm the producer, Dave Taylor, joined by the co-producer, Larry Heron, the parent coach. How you doing tonight, Larry?
Hey, I'm doing great, Dave. You know, I almost forgot I got that new title. My gosh.
Yeah, I wish I could attach it to a great big fat check for you. I mean, you're a very valuable asset to the broadcast, but the fact of the matter is we operate on very, very little, as you well know, and so we don't do this for the money, right?
Yeah, well, you know, if we did, Dave, let's just say we get paid everything we're worth or something like that.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what, Larry. Blew in here tonight. After a long day at work, I feel like I'm getting thrown in so many different directions these days. And I was so grateful that your mom threw some spaghetti on. Man, she does a great job with that. And I was, had it all ready for me when I blew through the door a little bit late and you guys had already eaten, and I'm just so thankful for your mom. She's a great lady.
She is. She's a great granny, I'll tell you that. And yeah, she is, Dave. That woman can cook. That's always been a very ongoing, consistent, steadfast thing about her. She knows how to cook. She likes to cook, and that's a great thing, Dave, because we're a couple of guys that like to eat.
Oh, you've got that right. And we've got the kids around, man. We got the whole grocery store going in there.
We do. We absolutely do. There's a lot of passion to food and a lot of passion to providing it. And, hey, I'm all for passion, so that's a good thing. And, you know, speaking of passionate things, Dave, I don't know if our listening audience knows, but speaking of passion and thriving, my gosh, I hear somebody's going to have an older-than-dirt birthday tomorrow.
Yeah, who's that?
Well, I think it's my co-host, Mr. Dave Taylor.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Well, you know, I was kind of trying to keep that a secret, but you know how secrets are around here. They're very easy to keep. But, well, that's cool. You know, thanks a lot, Larry.
Happy birthday, buddy. What is it?
It's the big 5-0.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, for our listening audience, last year we had at least two ladies call in. And at least one of them, I think, maybe two, or at least one who was trying their best to impersonate Marilyn Monroe, called in and sang Dave happy birthday. So I want to invite anybody out there who...
Look at on the board. I hear Dave's so old, he invented fire. No, I invented the wheel.
Let's just say Dave's been in the fire enough to own it. That's
yeah, as much as true.
That's a fact.
Yeah, that was good. You know, and that goes to the fact that, gosh, I know that my parents wonder why, how the heck I made it this far. And God bless my parents. They're out traveling. You know, normally my mom's on the board, but they're visiting relatives in Georgia.
And Dave Magic is reminding you that fire was before the wheel. So.
Well, we would like to hope so.
But, yeah, for any of you ladies out there that would care to call in and sing Dave Taylor happy birthday, I promise you we'll get you a Best Interest of the Family T-shirt.
Well, get them something. I'll tell you what, Larry, tonight's subject matter, I know that you're, pretty much the local expert, we're talking about parental alienation tonight, and I think that parental alienation, I mean, you tell me, but I think parental alienation is a facet in most every, in some way or another with parent-children relationships and in addition with the court system. I mean, I see it coming from different directions. I see alienation from many times the court system practices it or they enable it, the activities. But I know that specifically we're talking about a subject matter being parental alienation. I know there's different types of alienation, but Larry, why don't you tell our listeners in a nutshell what is parental alienation?
Well, Dave, parental alienation is a very, very serious and destructive kind of dynamic that occurs You're right, and any number of systems can practice it intentionally or unintentionally. My experience has been that though the systems get played and they get played into it, it starts with parents, no question about it. When you have a parental role and somebody tries to alienate you in that role, that's parental alienation, bottom line. So that, let's break it down, Dave. Where did the term parental alienation come from? If we were to look up alienation, for example, the word itself, and it's not a nice word. I don't know if you've ever looked at it, but it basically defined, it talks about to cause or to become unfriendly or hostile, withdrawn, or unresponsive. Now, there you go. To isolate or disassociate emotionally, and it equals estrangement. That's not, those aren't pretty pictures, are they?
No.
And parental alienation, in its most destructive course, is a brainwashing. It's exactly what it does. It creates an estrangement, if you will, and brainwashes a child against that alienated parent. And
you're talking about a form of programming.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Wow.
It is a form of programming. It's a form of brainwashing, and it occurs in various different formats and in simplistic ways, right on into very, very extreme ways. Now, a lot of people have been hearing this term parental alienation syndrome. I got to tell you, Dave, in my research and my clinical experience, I don't believe it's ever really, with all due respect to Richard Gardner's efforts, with all due respect to a lot of people with great intentions that are out there, I've never seen it meet criteria for a syndrome.
What would be a common syndrome?
Well, let's look at it in terms of a mental health disorder.
Okay, sure.
Where there's a number of different sets of criteria that go into what makes a diagnosis of bipolar 1 or bipolar 2 disorder,
okay,
which is a form of depression, schizophrenia, which is a thought disorder, psychosis, major depression, another mood disorder. We use what's called a DSM or a diagnostic manual of statistics to determine, it's a statistical manual to determine a diagnosis. And there has to be certain sets of criteria met to determine that diagnosis. Parental alienation, as in an effort to create a syndrome or criteria for it, to meet criteria for a syndrome, I've never really seen it done the same way as those criteria that are set in terms of an ongoing consistent pattern for major depression, bipolar, schizophrenia, different sets of mental health disorders. Now, what I have seen in hundreds and hundreds of hours of research and interviews and understanding is that the behavior of parental alienation is driven by other forms of disorders, most notably and most often a personality disorder. People with a personality disorder don't share very well. They don't share in relationships very well. When I say share, I mean they don't share a prized relationship with anybody else. They pretty much need to feel secure and in the center of that relationship, and you will pay a price if you cross them in that regard. And oftentimes in divorce, that gets triggered. Their sense of abandonment, their sense of neediness and attachment versus detachment, it scares them, quite frankly. It angers them. They're hurt, and they try to take the other parent out. Let me just piggyback on that by saying, though, that parental alienation, the people that practice, parents that practice parental alienation, is there's a profile to them. It has a profile to it. It doesn't just happen in divorce situations. It happens in marriage. There are alienating parents who will talk badly and destructively, or act that way toward the other parent, and they'll basically degrade and devalue their co-parent, even in marriage. Because again, it doesn't start with divorce. It doesn't start with separation. It starts with a personality profile that that the person is bringing to the table in their parental role.
Well, I think that we need to bring to our listeners the fact that you're actually going to be doing a seminar this Saturday from 10 until noon for dads and moms of Michigan.
That's a fact, Dave. I've been asked to do that, an educational seminar on parental alienation. It's not the first time I've done this seminar. It's, I hope, a very concrete way to understand what it looks like, what it doesn't, and maybe equally important, Dave, how we can combat parental alienation when it's occurring in our kids.
Now, my understanding is this is actually a free seminar, correct? A two-hour free seminar?
It's free. It's free of charge. And, Dave, why don't you tell our listeners where that's going to be?
Well, sure. In fact, if you have any additional questions, of course, you can go to dadsandmomsofmichigan.org, and right on their homepage, you can get information about the seminar that's on Saturday, September the 11th, just a few days from now. And it goes from 10 o'clock in the morning until noon. And again, that's entirely free, completely free. And if you have any additional questions, a toll-free number that you can call is 888-851-3666. And a local number is 248-559-3237. And this seminar, if you're not able to get to the internet, is at Hazel Park, Michigan, at the Hazel Park Eagles, which is located at 22010, so that's 22010 North Chrysler Drive, and the zip code is 48030. Again, that's at the Hazel Park Eagles, and again, you can go to dadsandmomsofmichigan.org and get additional information, or call the toll-free number, and someone will be happy to, give you that additional information that you might need to attend on Saturday from 10 until noon.
Well, we'll take that time, Dave, to educate and to help people understand, again, what that looks like and why it occurs and how it occurs, and equally important, what to do when it does occur.
Well, you mentioned that some folks with a personality disorder have a hard time sharing. Well, it's interesting, the Dads and Moms of Michigan is all about sharing. And, you know, the root of their existence is shared parenting. And, of course, that means cooperative parenting or co-parenting, you know, trying to work as cooperatively as possible with, you know, or the mom or the dad, whatever end of, you know, you might be on, to, you know, of course, further the best possible life for our children. And also that our children don't grow up to end up in your office.
That would be a phenomenal time in my life, Dave, when nobody needed me. And, you know, I'd gladly maybe become a builder or something.
And, you know, I'd gladly teach you. I could use the help some days.
But that's true enough, Dave. Anytime you try to take out a parental role, anytime you try to rob a child of that parental role, and, you know, an alienating parent might say, well, they're not needed. I can replace that role. Let me tell you something. You can never replace that role. And certainly if a parent is not, if they are behaving poorly, if they're truly a threat to their child, if they're truly legitimately going to be placing that child in harm's way, if they're emotionally abusive and they're physically abusive, certainly that's not alienation to try and isolate that parent and keep them keep their child out of harm's way in that regard. But to the alienating parent, they misinterpret that. They get a little bit delusional about parenting styles, and they don't do their kids any favors by exploiting any kind of issues or creating issues to try and then exploit and literally brainwash that child against the other parent. And obviously, it's for their own gains, if you will. And truly, I mean, I think that's one way to start in questioning whether you're alienating or whether you're truly trying to protect your child. What is it you're trying to get out of that process? Is it extra time for yourself and create more of a visitor status for that other parent so you can feel you're in control, that your children understand you're the primary parent, you're the winner, winner take all, that other parent, they're the ones who chose to leave, so they should just, you know, how dare them not want me but want the kids. You know what? They're the ones who created this mess. Quite frankly, kids, regardless of what that other parent was as a spouse, kids need a relationship, a whole and complete relationship with each healthy parent. And when you try to take them out of that, then you're really robbing your children because it's a separate relationship. Again, to understand how that works, though, you have to understand a personality disorder separate. Therein lies the issue. To a personality disorder, the way they kind of distort their role in relationships, their role in the world, that's where the difficulty lies. They don't do separate very well. It's kind of the attachment and detachment kind of thing. You know, it's kind of like when you share and, you know, I can have this with you, but I can still love my mother or love my father. And to a personality disorder, well, that love might be a little bit intimidating because you're going to love them better. My gosh. I don't love my father better than you. You're my husband. Or I don't love my mother better than you. You're my wife. It's different. It's a different kind of love. It's a different kind of role. It's a different kind of boundary. Personality disorder has trouble sharing that emotional space, though.
Well, I happen to have a very simple solution to parental alienation.
Well, I don't know if I want to ask, Dave.
No, we folks from Indiana, we're quite simple. And hello, say hello to Bob Fox. He just popped up on the board. Hi, Bob. And hi, Mike Saxton. And we got Mike Niles and a number of other folks. And we appreciate all the support that we get on this program. And as I mentioned from the get-go, I'm very grateful to be on tonight's broadcast because I had a tough day, Larry. And it's just good to be here and kind of relax in front of the microphone and share what's important to us. You know, and the most important things to us are our children, of course. But I was going to tell you the simple fix for parental alienation. And fortunately, there are a few judges and a few friend of the court workers that are actually getting it. They understand that when you take a parent out of the mix to a greater than lesser degree, and I'm talking about parenting time, then that gives the likelihood of that parent who's going to practice parental alienation the opportunity to create that wedge that they feel that they need, as you described. You know, they don't share very well.
Exactly.
So my fix to parental alienation, and this isn't a complete fix, this is more of a good Band-Aid at the very least. But you know what? If you can make the parenting time as equal as possible with both parents. Now, I know this isn't a perfect world. I know people have work schedules, they have obligations, things that are. But at the very least, and we heard Kathleen Ryan say this, someone who's running for probate judge in Oakland County, actually came up with the highest vote count in the primary, and she actually stated, you know what, I start at 50-50 unless you can show me differently. And again, I feel that that's a good fix because you know what? It doesn't enable the poor acting parent. And if you've got two parents that come in, I mean, the ideal situation, obviously, is you have both parents come in looking after the best interest of the children, and they say, you know what, I don't want to get into a bloody battle here. But the problem is that, you know, it isn't always like that, is it, Larry?
No.
You know, you get personalities involved, emotions get involved, and unfortunately, it turns into an absolute bloodbath.
It does indeed. But, you know, again, that should be a red flag for any judge or any FOC staff member who's trying to work out what's truly in the best interest of kids, is to take a look at who's trying to dominate and control in parenting and why versus sharing. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, here in Michigan, one of the 12 factors to custody has to do with, and I don't have the exact language,
yep.
I need to have Mike Thomas here or some of our other attorney friends, but it's along the lines of to the degree that that custodial parent can and is willing to foster a relationship for the non-custodial parent. And in the elements of parenting, that in and of itself is suggesting that they're willing to open the door, but to celebrate that other parent's role in their child's life for that child, to involve them in elements of parenting, to invite them and make it inviting versus, you know, playing games with access or playing games with, counting every minute and who's got the most overnights and who's going to participate and have the greatest influence in parenting and who's going to be more of a secondary parent, more of a visitor. Those are the kinds of things that kids just flat out don't need, that in fact creates a lot of scarring for kids because, quite honestly, kids need an authentic parental role with both parents. And when you take away time, when you take away opportunities for both parents to participate in elements of parenting that are primary to that child's need, that's not only parental alienation, that's a deep and lasting scarring of a child's psyche and their own ability to develop an ego strength that they need to be a self-producing, productive adult and to negotiate, you know, further relationships as they get older.
I just wanted to mention to our listeners that if you have a question or comment, please push *8. Go ahead, Larry.
So in parental alienation, there's simple forms, and then they get a little bit more drastic as they go, depending on the hostility of the alienating parent and the need that also that they have to feel connected or to, you know, their fears that they're going to lose that child. And that's pretty much what parental alienation, what drives it as well, is they're frightened. They're frightened. They don't feel like they're worth being loved. They don't feel like they can be loved. Usually they're intimidated by that other parent's ability to influence the child. And quite frankly, they feel the need to compete. And when they feel the need to compete, that's when they start to alienate. So, in the simplest forms, when you speak out against another parent, even when you lack a warmth or you know, let's say for example, your child is saying, "Hey, guess what, Dad? Mom is going to get me this or get me that," and you change the subject, or "Guess what, Mom? Dad and I, we went to the beach and he taught me how to swim." "Oh, well, my brother taught you how to swim long before that. It's probably just, you know, coming back to you because, you know," basically what you've done is you've devalued that child's positive experience with their dad or with their mom in those scenarios. And so when you do that, that is a form of parental alienation. Any kind of devaluing or any kind of efforts to diffuse or diminish that child's positive relationship and positive experience that they had with that other parent. Parental alienation is not, yeah, you know, Mom or Dad, they've got that drug issue, they've got that vice, they've got that addiction, and they really do, and you're trying to help your child understand it and to understand the boundaries in it, that they don't have to fix them. It's not their job. Emotionally, they need to be able to set limits to protect themselves and things like that. Those are legitimate. And so that's different than alienating where you're trying to create an issue, where you're trying to exploit an issue. And that would be, though, again, in devaluing the more simplistic kinds of forms, on into the more extreme, where, in fact, you literally deny your child access to that other parent in every way you can, where you just bombard that other parent when you're with your child, and you bombard them with hostile, angry, nasty kinds of descriptors, if you will, about that other parent. Your father is a deadbeat, low-life, egg-sucking parasite on earth because they do this or that. Your mother is a whore. She slept with every guy prior to me, and I'm sure she's sleeping with them all now. You know, quite frankly, Dave, when you say those things about the other parent, we're all very quick as parents, as professionals, and really it doesn't take anybody more than a half a brain to understand it, that your child is 50% you and 50% your co-parent.
Well, as we say often on this program, love your kids, as they say, love your kids enough to respect the other parent.
No question.
You know, and
because what we understand when everything is on the table and we're being reasonable, we understand that our kids are a 50-50 proposition, that we are a 50-50 proposition in our kids' lives. 50% me, 50% their other parent.
Well, I'll take it one step further, Larry. I mean, let's be honest. Sometimes you got to set the example.
No,
many times you got to take it on the chin over and over and over again when you've got that difficult co-parent.
No question.
I mean, I see it played out in many, many different situations. We counsel a lot of folks through Dads and Moms of Michigan, and I know that you do it as a professional.
But therein lies the issue. When you understand and you agree when it's right that, okay, so my child's a 50-50, big deal. Well, it is a big deal then, because if you're saying those things and they believe that they're 50% you and 50% the other parent, guess who you just called a whore? Guess who you just called a deadbeat parasite on the world? Guess who you just said, was fat or was useless or was dumb or would never amount to anything? Guess who you just pinged on? And really, as they're trying to feel confident about themselves, guess who you just tore some of that confidence away? I've said it a hundred times that as parents, we would take bullets for our kids. We would, if there was a cesspool out there, we wouldn't let our kids within 5 miles of it, and we'd bury ourselves in it before we let our children anywhere near it. We would do that as loving, caring parents. Yet we throw them into one, emotional cesspools. We throw them into them when we talk badly about their other parent.
Well, I'll tell you what, it can be as simple of an act as making sure that when you have parenting time, that you instruct your child that it's an expectation for them to pick up the phone and dial mom or dial dad.
No question.
You know, the most basic fundamental act is what your kids will resonate with. And they'll know if you do that, they'll know that you do respect the other parent. And if these expectations, I know that that's what I do at my house, I'll actually pick up the phone and I'll say, hey, it's time to call your mom, Rebecca. And I can see that that's important to my child, and of course it's important for me to talk to my daughter, and I know it's important for Rebecca to have that contact with me when she's not in my not in my care, and I think that it shows a level of sharing, and again children resonate with that. They understand, but they do better when they don't see this level of conflict.
No question about it, Dave, because they're not feeling like they're in the middle of it. They're not feeling like they've got a referee or they've got to be somehow fixing the two most important people in their life, and they're not feeling like they've got to fix their dynamic, a dynamic that, quite frankly, they can't even begin to understand, nor should they have to. And when they feel like that dynamic is unfixable, or certainly not something they can somehow fix, it creates a very anxious, nervous child. And, for you to be able to do that for Rebecca, for me to be able to do that with DJ, quite honestly, what it states is really a secure relationship with our child.
Yeah.
Because, DJ, we've got a landline here at the house. He doesn't have to pick up my cell phone and say, Dad, I want to call this or that. And quite honestly, at 7, he's pretty excited to know how to use the phone. and he wants to call everybody because, hey, I'm feeling pretty old, you know, I'm feeling pretty slick as a seven-year-old being able to pick up the phone and calling and shooting the breeze for 2 minutes because, quite honestly, he doesn't want to talk on the phone much longer than that. But to be able to pick it up, he feels pretty good about himself. Well, we got a landline here aside from my cell phone. He can pick that thing up, and I wouldn't know who he was calling. And quite frankly, I don't worry about it because I have a secure relationship with my child. And when you feel like you have a secure relationship with your child, you don't worry about that stuff.
Well, unless you got speed dial to China, I think you're okay.
Well, yeah, that's when you need a different long-distance plan, no question about it.
But I'll tell you what, again, this is kind of a precursor to what you're going to be doing on Saturday, you know, just kind of a warm-up, per se. So we're not going to be covering absolutely all the things that you're going to be covering on Saturday. In fact, a key benefit to actually attending that meeting on Saturday would be the fact that, you know, people can ask their own personal questions as to what's going on in their particular situations or their lives with their children and the other co-parent. And I'll tell you, many times there are some real interesting scenarios out there. I know you and I have, you know, you and I talk about these off the air, you know, a lot, Larry. And what were some of the things we were talking about today?
Well, yeah, Dave. I mean, like we were talking about the more simplistic kinds of forms of alienation, where, you know, we talked about where, for example, the typical phone call where, you know what, okay, fine, I'll give you phone access. You call that other parent right now, and, oh, by the way, I got a surprise for you, though, when you get off the phone, or we're going to be leaving for ballet or for baseball as soon as you're done, so hurry along, and, you know, you call that other parent, though, and have a good conversation, but remember, this really special thing is going to be happening. Well, that kid's, you know, depending on how old they are, they're pretty preoccupied.
Well, you were telling me about somebody you had talked to earlier in the day, because today was first day of school, of course,
mm-hmm.
for most
mm-hmm.
people. You were telling me about someone who called you about a kind of an alienating situation where a parent had filled out an emergency access card.
Right, right. And that's another form of alienation where, in fact, that is a form of alienation where they try to incorporate systems into the process. In this particular scenario, the parent tried to incorporate the school by filling out a emergency card, and they put everybody's name ranked in the order of importance in that child's life. Started with the parent, then it went to, I believe it was the grandparent, then it went to the step-parent, and then somewhere down the line, dad was mentioned. Pretty much served notice to the school that other parent was not important in terms of contact for emergency.
What did you instruct this this parent to do in this particular instance?
Well, if I'm remembering right, now this parent had joint legal custody, and I believe, again, I'm not an attorney, so even if he didn't, I don't think it would matter, but he had to fill out his own emergency card and go to the school and fill out an emergency card and instruct the school that, with all due respect, my child has two parents, dad and mom, mom and dad. Those are the only two people legally, that you need to be contacting in case of an emergency. And I expect you will. I expect to be contacted. I expect you to contact your other parent in any kind of case of an emergency. And I'm here to, support my child. Support my child to have a positive and rewarding school experience. So anything, you know, I can do to help your efforts in that, I'm here. But please be respectful. And here's my emergency card for my child. And, you know, like that's what I'll expect. So you're setting the parameters nicely but firmly. And I do encourage parents in all of these different systems that your child is in. This is one more reason and how, quite frankly, that when you're not involved in elements of parenting, when you're not in your child's world and all the different aspects of their world that they participate in, that parental alienation can take seed, can take root in the seeds that are laid. Okay, it's really an effort to exploit the voids that create that are in you and your child's relationship. And we'll go over this in the seminar. I do a wheel of what a family looks like, and it includes neighborhood and school and spiritual, whether it be church, synagogue, temple, whatever, all the elements that are important in that child's world. And if you're not involved in all of them, well, boom, there's an opportunity to exploit. And that's exactly what the alienating parent does. So the more involved you are, the more you're known and seen, for example, in the school. Oh, yeah, that's so-and-so's mom, or that's so-and-so's dad. And, yeah, we know them. They're decent. They you know, they come here. They help out on field trips. They bring them to school. They know the teacher. They know the principal. A lot less likely to line up against you when they know you, and it's a positive knowing, okay? Now, if you're in there ranting and raving and being everything you're exploited to be, well, yeah, then that's when alienation can take effect. That's when people can start second-guessing.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, as you know, Larry, our children spend 6-7 or so hours a day, 5 days a week when school starts up for a number of months. And so it's a significant amount of time that our children are exposed to other third party teachers and administrators and what have you. And I think it's important that listeners know that and most of the listeners actually have, you know, some form of legal custody. You know, God forbid those that find themselves in a battle where they're, you know, trying to establish that they should have some type of say-so in the religious matters and the school matters and the health matters and things like that. But I'll just tell people right out, what I say is don't ask permission to be the parent, because you already are. So if there are school activities, as you pointed out, become involved. Become involved in the clubs and the social activities that the other parents are being involved in.
Get to know the other parents.
Absolutely. Get on the email list.
Absolutely get to know your children's friends.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, what I do with Rebecca, for example, this might be a good idea for some listeners, is, yes, I will allow Rebecca to have a play date on a school night. And you know what it entails, Larry? It entails doing the homework first. And I say, okay, you can have Juliet over or you can have Natalie over, but here's the deal. You know, you come home, we'll have a little snack first. You guys can play for 10 minutes or so, but then the homework comes out, and you do your homework together. And then if there's a little time left over before we have dinner or something, before we, you know, take Natalie or Juliet back to their parents, then we can play some Nintendo or we can play a board game or what have you. And that works out pretty good.
I'll tell you, Dave, when you know your children's friends and they know you and they like you, boy, does that give you credibility with your kids. That's something else. I'll tell you, I talked to DJ after school today to find out, you know, how his day went. How'd your first day back to school go, buddy? So he sees me, he experiences me, absolutely, that's even more important, as an intricate part of that building, of that process in his life, because I take the time to be. And when I'm able to tell him, for example, when I went to the school today to kind of, you know, participate in walking into class and which, you know, he's getting bigger now, he's not real interested in, but at the same time, I was there for his first day, more of a show of support, and he knew that. And a couple of his friends from the last couple of years came up, hey, DJ's dad. And so I saw them before I saw him, and they told me what class they were going to be in. And when they told me, a couple of them that they were in DJ's class, I was able to tell DJ that before DJ knew it. And so as he's telling his other friends, one of his best friends, Julian, he was saying, that's cool, we're in the same class. Oh, yeah, and my dad told me Sean's going to be in there too. And so, you know, it's like all of a sudden you're in the mix now. And all them kids, you know what, Dave, they like me. That's the most humbling experience I've ever known. They think I'm pretty cool for an old man, and they're like, DJ, your dad is cool. I'll tell you what, that's the kind of stuff money just can't buy.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, during the broadcast tonight, folks, I actually got a phone call back from my daughter, and I asked her, you know, of course, first day of school, hey, how was your first day of school? And her response was, it was awesome, Dad. And I'm like, where are we going to go from here? Because the first day was awesome. You know, with Mr. Maldonado, for pity's sake, you know, what's the rest of the year going to be like? You know, she really enjoys this new teacher, and I know he's a fabulous individual, and he's a fabulous young teacher. He's been at it, you know, for a number of years now. But you know, but I still consider him young because I'm pushing 50 tomorrow.
Dave,
I know he's only in, you know, the 30-somethings at the very best. You know,
according to Magic over here on the board, you're older
than fire.
You're older than fire. Certainly the wheel. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you know, I certainly have a lot of fire.
You know, I think you're right. I'm excited about DJ's year as well, and just had the pleasure to meet his teacher for the first time today, Mrs. Phelps, who I'd never met before. I've been kind of hanging around the school and trying to get to know all the people in it, and I've been excited to meet some very young and inspirational teachers that really, you know, they inspire me to watch some of these teachers. But Mrs. Phelps, I think, is somebody who's been around a long time, and I had just a casual but enjoyable interaction with her this morning as she was greeting students in the door. She seemed to be, to me anyways, to be somebody who was pretty low-key, easygoing, had seen it all, and I think that's just what my little guy needs because, as you know, DJ can be quite the little negotiator and talker, and he's going to own the class inside of 5 minutes, and I think he may meet his match with Mrs. Phelps. I'm excited to watch.
She'll have his number. Is that what you're saying?
I think she's known plenty of DJs in her career, so I'm excited to see how this plays out.
Sure, sure.
But I'm also excited to watch and to participate, and I know you are as well because you do homework with Becky, and you know, is there, you know, they're already smarter than we are, but is they're beginning to understand that their reading and math skills and writing. And watching and experiencing their growth by helping them to achieve it in the homework and going to the plays and going to the extracurricular activities and just supporting them and cheering them on, it really just means the world. I tell you, Dave, that's why I've always said, you know, being a parent is the greatest legacy we'll ever leave.
Oh, absolutely. You know, that's funny. You should say, you know, their kids are smarter than us, and that's all fine. In fact, a number of years ago when my child was still very small, probably 3 or 4 years old, you know, just and I remember being on the phone with a friend of mine, and I said, you know, Rebecca's smarter than her dad. And then, you know how kids are at 3 or 4 years old. It might take them a couple of weeks, you know. And then all of a sudden it comes back on you. She says, Dad, am I smarter than you? And I said, I sure hope so. You see, I don't feel challenged by that. I think good parents or good healthy individuals don't feel challenged by that. You know, whether it's your child or someone else that's close to you, you know, you want to encourage those qualities, you know, and those folks. You know, everybody comes with their gifts, you know. And speaking of gifts, you know, I'm just really pleased that Rebecca has a teacher that she knows is going to be fun, is fun, but she also knew going in that he's very challenging too. And I think it's important to challenge our children some kids come to it naturally, some need to be pushed a little bit, Rebecca's a pretty bright kid, and so is DJ, and as you pointed out, DJ is a bit of a negotiator, you know, so if you give him an inch, he'll take a mile, right?
No question about it, and he works.
Well, that's where that challenge comes in, you know.
But he works, you know, again, this is how you can prevent alienation to some degree, is by knowing your child and knowing their personality traits, understanding that, you know, you can have three different kids with three extreme different personalities. How many, well, Dave, I mean, my gosh, how many siblings have you got?
How many siblings? You talking about brothers and sisters?
Well, yeah. That's a sibling, Dave.
Oh, yeah, I'll just double check it here.
Even in Indiana.
It's been a long day, dude. I was double checking it.
What'd y'all call him in Indiana?
Well,
pack?
Sometimes, you know, because in my family,
in
the Taylor household, I had, this will help everybody understand the real dynamics about Dave Taylor. See, I had two older sisters and two younger brothers. So not only was I the oldest son, but the middle child. So you talk about, now, so don't blame me, friend of the court. When I come back at you and I say, I'm not going to stand a visitor in my child's life, I'm sorry. You know, it just comes with the territory. I'm the middle child. I'm the oldest son. So you're going to get it right back from me.
And you know, as many similarities as you might find in the Taylor family traditions, my thought is that each and every one of you have extremely different styles and learning and personalities, And, you know, it's that's what you get. So you got to know, you got to know your kids, and you got to know your child's personality and how they learn best. Now, what's Magic telling me here on the board in Kentucky, siblings are...
God forbid.
Oh, Magic.
That's going to happen, I guess.
That is funny. That is funny. And
all your hate mail should go to Magic.
If we have anybody listening in from Kentucky, that's Magic. We'll give you the address and his location. Let me just say that siblings get married in other places too. And that reminds me of a joke, though.
Be careful, Larry. I heard all your jokes. They're not appropriate for the radio program.
Do you know what a tornado and a redneck divorce have in common, Dave?
No, I do not, Larry. What does a tornado and a redneck divorce have in common?
Somebody's going to lose a trailer.
And that's about the only ones that we got here. And and how do you compliment a girl from Kentucky? Nice tooth. Oh, come on. We're going to go back to buy two for us here in a moment. I just know it. We're going to get back to these Indiana girls that I used to date. I miss my mom being on the show tonight because she's the only one that gets these stupid Indiana jokes. Anyway, Larry, getting back to parental alienation, our subject matter for tonight, as we're winding things down. What else can listeners expect to take in on Saturday at the Eagles Club in Hazel Park, Michigan? And again, if they want to find out information about the shared parenting seminar, which is, again, at the Hazel Park Eagles from 10 until noon, they can go to 888-851-3666, or go to dadsandmomsofmichigan.org. Back to you, Larry.
Well, Dave, Saturday's going to be a lot more up close and personal. We're gonna have some audience participation. We're going to use some examples. We're going to go over a list of do's and don'ts in parental alienation. Some of the do's: how do you structure your time with your kids to make alienating efforts a lot more difficult for that alienating parent? And we're going to list some of the don'ts, some of the things that actually make you alienating as a parent, or feeds into the efforts of that alienating parent and actually creates the roots to the seeds that are planted. You can't necessarily stop an alienating parent from trying to plant seeds. You can prevent it from ever taking roots. And sometimes it's by, you know, what you do as much as what you don't do that creates roots, that creates problems and the voids when you, for example, act out what you're being accused of being. And it's important. Knowledge is important because, you know, what you don't know can hurt you. And so it's important to understand what alienation is. But, you know, Dave, the difference between knowledge and wisdom, knowledge is a set of information, right?
Right.
Wisdom is knowing what to do with it.
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what, as we wind down tonight, Larry, I know that you and I got some very disturbing news a couple of days ago about a parent who is being severely and seriously alienated against. And while we're not going to name names, we want our prayers go out to a father who just got information just a day or two ago that his son, what is his age, 17?
17.
17 years old, committed suicide. And I can't think of anything more heart-ripping than getting that type of news and especially having been alienated from that child for a number of years. And again, best interest of the family radio sends our condolences to this father.
Dave, it's been about 3 or 4 years that this father was alienated from his son and an eldest son. And when I received the call, been a long time since I received a call that just made me want to vomit, and I honestly did. In its most tragic and destructive form, that's what alienation does. I can assure you, this was a kid. Never met him, didn't know him, but I can assure you that this only is an example of the destructive, the just deep gut-wrenching hurt that children feel at every age when their parents aren't in their lives because of the alienating efforts that that take root. And it leaves them with voids and hurts and unresolved, deep-seated, scarring issues that they just can't seem to work out ever. And whether it's 17 or 27 or 37, because of what didn't get met at these ages, and they end up ending their life, that is the most tragic, devastating outcome that I could just even ever imagine. You're right, Dave. Our prayers go out. I just continue to pray as well that somehow, some way, parents get it, that the system gets it, as you'd mentioned before, that the system also gets it to prohibit this kind of nonsense, this kind of tragedy that when, you know, a good and willing parent wants to step up and be one, nobody should get in the way. But my gosh, parents, we got to get it. We've got to understand that our children need us, both of us, that our children deserve and need a better outcome. So that's why we do this show, Dave. That's why we continue to educate, why we continue to reach out, why we continue to say that we'll never stop being a parent to our kids or an advocate for kids to have both parents in their lives. That's what we do. That's what we're about.
Well, let's face it, Larry. You know, you and I came to these issues because, you know, our children mean a great deal to us. I mean, more than air itself, for the most part.
No question about it.
And I've heard you say on numerous cases, so I won't take your thunder from you, but I know that you travel through a very hot place.
Go ahead, Dave.
No, I want you to do it because I get the biggest kick when you say it.
I'd walk through hell with a can of gasoline for my child.
That's why I love you, Larry. You know, because you got such a way with words and such a way of expressing yourself that's just unique. I'll tell you what, again, you know, Larry and I put on these broadcasts, you know, because we see it as a mission. We see it as so necessary that these issues like parental alienation, that, you know, the court reform, and the such, that it's important to encourage other people going through this that might be listening to our broadcast, in addition to the opportunities of touching base with those that actually are within the system, judges, friend of the court workers, DHS, CPS, and you know, while we don't want to alienate you through the process, we'd like you to partner with us. We'd like you to embrace and understand and take an opportunity and be objective with your thinking and understand there are other ways to deal with these matters. And these other ways specifically include not turning one of the parents into a visitor in the lives of the children.
No question. Well stated.
Now, with that said, we want to invite you to the Shared Parenting Seminar this weekend, Saturday, September the 11th, sponsored by Dads and Moms of Michigan and held at Hazel Park Eagles, which is at 22010 North Chrysler Drive in Hazel Park. Zip code is 48030. You can contact Dads and Moms of Michigan and find out more about it on their website. It's on their homepage, dadsandmomsofmichigan.org. Again, we thank everybody that supports our broadcast, and more than anything, Larry and I are grateful for our children. in our relationships with our kids. It's made us better men, and it's made us just better people, because there's no better relationship or no better legacy or no better place in life that we can be put than being responsible for a little person that we can see grow and share in their joys. And it's like I tell my daughter often, my daughter will say, "Hey, Dad, why don't you come and do this?" And of course, we do stuff together a lot. But I'll say, "You know what? I'm enjoying watching you do it, sweetie." There's no greater joy than being a parent. So you go out, folks, be the parent. Don't ask for permission, because that's just who you are. You have a God-given right. You have a constitutional right to raise your children. And here at Biff Radio, we encourage you. We uphold your right to be the parent that you know that you can be. If you have to go through struggles to be there, then so be it. Don't let systems or individuals stand in your way. Do what you have to do to remain a constant, loving, and encouraging parent in the life of your child.
Well, Dave, you said a very important word there, a constant, consistent. Kids will, as much as they need that consistency in time and in connection with you, they also only through that will they equate your role as a parent with them. Kids qualify a role in the time spent experiencing you in one. So you really do. You need to be consistent. You need to show up in all of the elements of parenting that kids need you to show up in. Kids need both parents. That's not just a slogan we think is cute, so we say it. That's the God's truth. Kids need both parents. So stay consistent.
Very good. Well, with that said, we will see you next Tuesday. We were going to have on, in addition to talking about it, parental alienation, but we were going to have our friend and legal counsel, Mike Thomas, on tonight. We want to wish Mike Thomas the best and wish him well and wish him good healing, because unfortunately he broke himself a few days ago and is dealing with a very, very sore wrist at the moment.
No question about it.
So we want to send our love and our prayers out to Mike. And my understanding is that Mike thinks that he's going to be in good enough shape to come on Tuesday coming up. So we wanted to give our listeners a little heads up on that and let them know that we're going to be covering the 10 factors, the rest of the 10 factors, or trying to get down further on the list of the 12 best interest factors that we deal with here in Michigan. So until next Tuesday, folks, God's blessings, and we will see you then.
Good night.